Meditation.
Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I just feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you're new to the podcast, thank you for finding us. Thank you for giving us a shot. This is a podcast about meditation and all the aspects of applying meditation to the various parts of a modern, busy life. You don't have to live in a city to listen to Meditation in the City. City is like the proverbial city of our modern life. Okay, enough of that. Today on the podcast, Maho Kawachi. This is her second time on the podcast. Very happy to have her back. Her first talk for us was back in maybe about 6 months ago. This was a talk she gave at our weekly Dharma gathering a couple of weeks ago. And it's about losing solid ground, the curveballs life throws at you, and how meditation can help. Maho Kawachi is a journalist. She was born and raised in Tokyo, has been living in New York since the 90s, and has been meditating in the Shambhala tradition since the 2000s. Visit our website in my.shambhala.org for all of our upcoming courses and retreats. In particular, two things I want to bring to your attention. We have an introductory weeknight course, which is called Contentment in Everyday Life. It starts Thursday, February 15th, and it's 4 Thursdays. It's open to anybody who wants to learn how to make friends with themselves. You want to do that, right? And use their mindfulness practice, their meditation, to meet the challenges of daily life. You can go to the website, inmy.shambhala.org, to register. It's being taught by David Perrin, another regular contributor to the podcast and the guy who just did our 7-day retreat. Also upcoming is our 2-day mini retreat for new students looking to dive into meditation. Shambhala Training Weekend 1, Feel Human Again. It's being led by Dr. Shante Smalls the weekend of March 2nd to 4th. Again, all the information's on the website. You can register. Check it out. And now, here is Maho Kawachi.
On March 11th, 2011, at 2:46 p.m. exactly, a 9.1 magnitude earthquake hit Japan. The epicenter was northeast, probably 230 miles north of Tokyo, called Tohoku area. So the earthquake caused a huge tsunami and probably 30 feet high, a wall of waves swept villages, hills, and destroyed the villages. And as you may know, subsequently damaged the nuclear reactors in that area. So the combined total death and missing is more than 22,000. Still 2,500 people are missing, supposed to be. After the initial shock of this earthquake and tsunami, because of this nuclear reactor started spilling this radiation, people had to evacuate. Close to 500,000 people had to evacuate. And as of last year, in March, still about 120,000 people are still away from home. Some people decided to abandon the home. Some people are still hoping to come back and still living in a temporary housing. The story never ends. I will not forget a mail from my friend. She lives in Japan. She lives in Tokyo, and that day, she was at home. She wrote to me. As I was dodging under the kitchen table, clinging to my dear life and praying for help, I witnessed the earth was shaking. In front of my eyes, it was not really shaking. It was rolling like a wave. The earth was no longer a solid ground. It was a stormy ocean. We don't face that kind of catastrophic incident every day, fortunately. But think about it. We face loss of security, or we feel uncomfortable shaking ground in everyday life. Intuitively, we always live our life with fight or flee or maybe freeze, that kind of mode, don't we? Historically, if we think about it, as a human beings, going back to the caveman period, maybe 300,000 years ago or so, when we still live in a cave and drew the beautiful picture on the wall of the caves. That period, we should have had this very uncertainty and constantly struggling for survival. We had to hunt for food, we had to gather water, we had to protect ourselves from the beasts or other tribes. So this constant struggle, constant fear, maybe those experiences are ingrained in our DNA. And maybe we still carry that kind of memories. So intuitively, we are always reacting, no, or help me, or fight. In a way, we don't have much chance to really sit down and see what's going on, you know, with open eye, with open mind, open eyes. We are always reacting to the phenomena. We are always acting to the incident. And over the years, we've developed and invented many tools to fight or solve the problems. You know, fire is a big thing. And weapons, medicines, and automobiles, internet, even the nuclear missiles and so forth. But can we really eliminate all the scenarios that cause you fear, uncertainty and anxiety? We keep trying to fix the situation and actually get more agitated. We really don't have chance to really rest in the moment and space and see the reality. So when we think of the ultimate losing ground or being out of control, is when you face the death, maybe old age, sickness, and death. Particularly, death is a really tricky thing. It's really deep-rooted with our own fear because we don't know what to do, because we never experienced in our life. When your beloved one is diagnosed with terminally ill, probably the first emotion you might have is a fear. Because you really don't know what to do. And next moment, many of you are trying to fight against the situation. Some of you might know Peter Thiel. Does it sound right? A Silicon Valley venture capitalist, big shot, who is a co-founder of PayPal and board member of Facebook. He's a billionaire. He is said to be a spearhead of finding a cure for death. He doesn't want to die. In the issue of the magazine, The Inc., 2015, he had this big interview. It's a quote, he said, "The way we deal with mortality is through some strange combination of acceptance and mortality. When you combine extreme pessimism and extreme optimism, they sort of converge," he says. Extreme pessimism tells you there's nothing you can do. Extreme optimism tells you there is no need to do anything. Well, you know, in the grief cycle, theorized by psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the first stage to deal with death is denial. You don't want to believe it. No, I'm not gonna die. That's a joke. That's the first stage of the five stages she describes. And actually, acceptance of death is the last stage. So the Peter Thiel believes what we all need is a lot more of stage two, which is anger. He said, I like the fighting stage to be really long. Interestingly, Steve Jobs, he's famously suggested death is the single best invention of life. Some of you may have heard his commencement at Stanford, 2005, beautiful speech. He said, and that it is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It is life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Right now, the new is you, the class of 2005, I believe. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Thiel says, I believe the exact opposite of that. Maybe it's when people think they have no time left that they don't undertake things. I leave the judgment to you. In Buddha's last word, his last word consists of two sentences. Sometimes there are many translations for this, so I just said two examples. Transient are all conditioned things. Strive on with diligence. Or, all compounded things are subject to vanish. Strive with earnestness. Think about the first half of it. Transient are all conditioned things. We cannot stay forever. We cannot stay the same forever. Everything is impermanent. On the contrary to nihilistic thought of impermanence, like everything is void because everything is impermanent. Actually, impermanence can be very joyful and encouraging statement too. Everything changes. Everything doesn't last forever. Which means you break up with your love of your life, you're heartbroken, but things will change. You lost a job, but see what's going to happen next. The society is so dark, but it's not going to last forever. The situation can change any time. It's not going to last forever. I personally feel it is very uplifting to see, think that situation changes no matter what. Also, being transient, being impermanent, implies that we are always changing to new phases. One thing happens and that thing leads to another. like Steve Jobs says, old will disappear to clear for the new generation. Because it happens, it causes new things, and so forth. We see law of karma. I'm getting old, and I'm replaced by a new young girl, and I'm clearing the way, and I'm also getting wisdom because I'm getting old. So everything intertwined. When you reject or try to fix things unnecessary or ignore what's going on and ignore this impermanence and karma, you suffer, basically. Understanding this impermanence and karma is in a way antidote of seeking everlasting solid ground. By staying and resting the situation without reacting with unnecessary fear, we can even obtain so-called equanimity. Well, even without having extreme case like death, even when we thought things are going well, we easily fall into this fight or flight mode easily. In everyday life, let's say on Sunday morning, the sky is blue and sunshine, you chill out, sipping coffee, nothing, no big agenda. Seemingly everything is fine. And paradoxically, the mind is unconsciously anticipating trouble. You feel that? You kind of sense that kind of thing sometimes, no? Like, kind of thing. When it happens, can we stay without rejecting it? Can we stay in the moment? Can we stay and observe this creepy emotion? Oh, I have this kind of anxiety now. Without judging yourself. Oh, I have some fear. Can we just stay? The point is, we are not just seeking this constant joy in the moment, because life sucks most of the time. Right? I don't know, maybe. 50-50, sorry. So the point is, can you really see this moment without saying it sucks? Can we see, just say, see this reality? Can we see this, our mind, the wave of emotions, the reality, and stay? So refusing or ignoring, that's the symptoms of seeking the solid ground. When we can see what is true and what would be a wise next step, when we learn how not to create suffering for ourselves and others. We are finally see this kind of freedom. Actually, we don't need the solid ground because we have an ability to dance in the space, moment by moment. The second half of the Buddha's last word, strive with diligence. Strive with earnestness. According to Mr. Andrew Olensky, who is a teacher of insight meditation tradition, he translates into a much more uplifting version. He said, move with confidence into the future. It tells an importance and encouragement for us to engage to our life, engage to our society. Even we don't need to carry this, you know, whole world responsibility. Our action, our attitude, our intention have an impact to the future. That's what he says. It is connected to the first half of the word, impermanence and karma. Whatever I do will make a difference in the world. So be diligent. I'm coming to the little political talk here. Former President Obama, his famous campaign slogan was, yes, we can, right? But there was another catchy phrase. Do you remember? Any of you remember? Hope is word, but there was a phrases. Fired up, ready to go. Does any of you remember that? Okay, here's a funny story. Maybe you might have heard. So he created these slogans in 2007. And the story goes, he was in the campaign trail and he went to this South Carolina. He stopped at Greenwood, very small town. And he was very depressed because that time he was still far behind Hillary and the campaign didn't go well that time for some reasons. And that meeting, only like 30, 40 people showed up. So he was really like, really in a grumpy mode. But anyway, so he delivered a speech. And one of the participants, audience, he heard a voice from the back behind. Fired up! That was a little old lady. And as soon as she said, fired up, the other participant started replying, fired up. And she said, ready to go. And then other people said, ready to go. So it was something like this. You know, she created this movement, fired up, ready to go. So this lady, Edith Childs, a local NAACP holder, kind of position holder, I had an opportunity to talk with her. She told me Obama was freaked out. He just did not know what to do. Like people say, fired up, ready to go. So she started repeating these phrases very slowly and kind of chanting. And finally, Obama got it and joined the phrase, fired up, ready to go, fired up, ready to go. She said it lasted about 5 minutes. But after that, he really got the message, and in a way, he was changed, and he got this great campaign phrase. He was really galvanized. He used this phrase in the end of speech many times, far less than yes, we can, but you can still find it in YouTube or something. It is quite moving. So always he concluded with, a voice can change a city. A city can change a state. A state can change a nation. And the nation can change the world. So this small voice, this Edith Childs, changed the nation. The small action, a small word, a small intention or anything, whatever you do right now causes the impact and can change the course of the world. Even we do not have the solid ground to cling on to, we can change the world. We can live with every moment, with confidence.
Impermanence, yes, we know things come and go, but it often seems that it's the good things that go. And it just can be very discouraging. So sometimes the change is in a direction you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we accept that? Do you have anything to say?
Yeah, it's a really big question, isn't it? Yeah, like, you know, the people you like, people you love are gone, you know. The moment, the very beautiful moment would disappear. You don't like it. That's true. But again, because the life is so precious, because this moment is so precious, and we might lose, or we might hold for a little bit longer. If you can accept this, you can see the beauty of it more. Because your life is precious, but in the end, it will be gone. So can we respect can we treasure as much as you can? Probably that's the way you can see it. Because you love this person, you love this dog, and you know this relationship, the moment is not forever. So can we really stay with this beautiful moment, moment by moment by moment, until it will be gone? Can we really enjoy? That's all I can say. I mean, sometimes it really is not good. I agree with you. Yeah. I think I told many of you, well, I don't know if you are here. In Japan, the cherry blossom, and as you know, it's only 10 days a year. So people like March Madness, like really cherry blossom is a madness among our psyche. And funny, because the cherry blossom, once it starts blooming, no matter what, the flower doesn't go, you know, well, until it becomes full bloom, it stays. But once it becomes the full bloom, like moment, next moment, it's gone. So it's just 10 days of window. People just like appreciate like a crazy. And you know, it's gone. It will be gone after 10 days. But something like that. It's sort of impermanence, beauty, kind of flip side of the coins.
I just wanted to know, how do you find happiness when like you're going through those things? Like, how do you keep that happiness like in such struggles? Like, is there a way? Did Buddha ever say like anything?
When you're in the depths of the sadness or agony, you cannot feel the happiness, of course. But the thing is, the relief of this agony or real strong, how do you say, pain, you will know it's not going to last forever. So it's kind of relief that even though you feel that this is the end of my life or this is the end of my world, whatever, it's not going to last forever. The situation always changes. I don't know if it's in a good way or bad way, I don't know, but things will change. So the moment of your tough time is not forever.
All right, can I ask a specific question? Like, this is for me now.
Sure.
All right, so say your whole world always changes, and it's basically like it doesn't make sense after a while. It's kind of annoying. It's frustrating. And you deal with it as you go, but after a while you get tired of it. Like, what do you do? Because the world that you knew it as before is not what it is now. So what do you do?
It's a heavy question. Todd, can you help me?
Interesting how things change. I appreciated your question. And I felt like when I was listening to it, I remembered that many times, or most often, people get into harder and harder situations. So that's it's one of the ways things seem to go. And a lot of the times, maybe most of the time, we can't see it. So what I feel right now is if I'm able to see that, at least right now in my life, maybe another time I won't be able to, but if I'm able to see that many, many beings are in a place of a lot of suffering, that maybe that's a way to think, to approach that.
Well, thank you, sorry. The Japanese earthquake is 2011, right? And now it's 2018. If you were born around that time, 2011, probably that child doesn't know anything but this destroyed community. And if you are born under the war, you know, or dictatorship, whatever, I just wonder,
I like his answer. The problem with me is that sometimes I can't even tell what's real after a while. After a while, I just blank out. Like, it's just like, it doesn't even make sense anymore. I just ignore it. Like what you were saying earlier, don't ignore it, all that stuff. I thought that was funny because it was like, I felt like it was geared to me because that's what I was doing. I was ignoring everything a little bit earlier today and pretty much throughout the whole day. So it's funny you said all that stuff. But can I answer my own question?
Sure.
I think that, when I go through what I go through, it's very hard. It's like, it's very, very hard. I can't really describe it, but it's extremely difficult at times. And so I work in the mental health field. I'm a peer counselor. And I was ignoring my coworkers the whole day because they've been getting on my nerves for like the past 5 months. And so I just decided to just listen to music and just, you know, tune everybody out. And then I get on the train and I'm still seeing things that don't really add up. And then I get to a client and I remember thinking like, none of this really matters anyway. This is all illusionary. So I'm walking and I see the client and I get sad because I start crying because I was like, you know, I actually enjoy helping her, you know? Mm. And now it doesn't really matter. So it's like, it felt like the only thing that I really have left to, you know, that I have, that I do, is taken away, you know? So it's like, so it's sad. So I'm crying. So this is a client with mental illness now. Mm-hmm. I mean, she says Happy Valentine's Day on Christmas Day and things like that. Merry Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever. So she says stuff like that. So I go up to her and she immediately makes me laugh. She goes, oh, Happy Father's Day, Donald. Happy Father's Day. She normally says Happy Valentine's Day. But she says Happy Father's Day, Donald. And she spotted me immediately and she goes, And my eyes were, it was no water in my eyes by that time. I already wiped my eyes or whatever because I figured I got to do my job. And then she goes, you know, you don't have to cry. And it seems like even someone in such a what appears to be severe mental state was aware of my whatever pain and suffering at the time. Mm-hmm. I think that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I feel like, well, quote unquote, normal people in this world, what we do is it is suffering, like he said. Mm-hmm. It's like, it is suffering. It's deep suffering. It's full of distractions and like these, you know, remedies and this and this and this. It's, I think a lot of it is like people are just forgetting to just be, you know, just be free, just be who you are, just live, you know. And for me, it's just hard because it feels like sometimes like everything is stripped away at times. But that's part of like that illusionary type of thing, I think. And I don't necessarily think that's real because I know what's really real. If anything in my life has ever been real, it's been the love, you know? That's always been real. That's always been constant. I don't think that's impermanent at all. I think that never changes. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your service.
Hello, and I'm inspired by what you've said tonight. Because when I was in my darkest places and when the world seemed most unkind or untrustworthy, what I always found was that I could cultivate that those kind of very small connections to things. Like even if I had a lot of trouble with trusting the world growing up, for reasons that were real, that I couldn't trust the world that I grew up in. And it led me into a lot of drugs and alcohol when I was a young woman. And the only way for me to get out of it was to focus on the very concrete, simple truths, like there's a cushion here and I'm sitting on it right now. This is true. And the more that I was able to center right in that moment, those opportunities to connect to something else were always there. Sometimes, I remember one time you mentioned the cherry blossoms. The cherry blossoms were the first thing I saw when I got sober that was not gray. The whole world had become gray. And one day I looked up and the cherry blossoms were falling. And they weren't gray. It was startling to me, absolutely startling. But I remember that vividly as a moment when I began to feel like the world was workable, had beauty in it and possibility. But I had to keep looking for it or opening myself up to the possibility that it would come. Because my own mind by that time would always take me back into sort of the negative spirals that had led me into those patterns in the first place. So, but it took years to cultivate that piece by piece and keep looking for the parts of the world that I found love in, you know, and sometimes it was in the least likely places. Places not where you think you're going to get it at all. So, or at least where I it always came where I least expected it. And that was fun. And that has been fun since. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. My brother was living in Yokohama at the time of the earthquake, so he told me a very similar story just outside of Tokyo. I haven't read the article that you mentioned, but I think that I believe something similar to Peter Thiel. So I wanted to ask, am I still, I don't know quite how to form this, can I still think in terms of impermanence and change and a lot of the core principles of Buddhism, thinking that maybe he's right. Sorry? That we should treat death like we treat cancer, which is make it a choice as much as we can.
I believe he majored philosophy in a bachelor's degree or something, so he knows those things. So he deliberately chose this, his thinking. Well, in a constructive way, if we try to find a cure, let's say, in Alzheimer or dementia, you know, in a way, it's sort of reversing the time, reversing this aging process, right? I think that's not the bad thing to me, personally. And if you find the so-called cure to the cancer, that's amazingly helping to many people. But no matter what, reversing the time and living immortal life is something to me, it's really arrogance. I don't know how I cannot articulate myself. But this is something, first of all, if you find the cure, right, to the death, this could be very expensive and probably only 0.1% can afford it. And do you want to live that life? You know, everybody other than you will be gone. And you are still alive. Can you stay alive with 45 years old body with Yoda's age? Can you do that? I mean, I don't know if it seems to me it's kind of impossible. So no matter what, you can live forever, let's say, 1,000 years. Can you really enjoy? That's another story, isn't it? So I'm sorry, I cannot answer to your questions directly, but this is my take. It's not right.
Thank you.
What's it, his name's Peter?
Peter Thiel.
Peter Thiel. Okay, mm-hmm. So his point is that he wants to stay living as long as possible. That's mm-hmm. he's got an attachment
in, mm-hmm. in his life.
Let
yeah.
go, and with attachment always comes great pain and suffering. So, mm-hmm. yeah, he's always going to be thriving and suffering, trying mm-hmm. to get this goal. So, over the past 5 years, death has been kind of a very prominent theme in my life. As 5 years ago, my partner passed away, hit the depths of suffering after something like that, but. Through it, you eventually get through it and you see more clearly and you begin to embrace better things. You see how you grew from it. Like, I can't imagine my life without that anymore, as horrible as that even sounds in itself. And 1 year ago, I was sitting in my skin and I went to the doctors and I was told that I was extremely sick and I was preparing for my own death. When you go through those two experiences in the matter of 5 years, you really sit with death. And you sit there and go, what is this? And for my sake, I got through both of these. And what those experiences taught me was a fearlessness. is when you can break away from even the fear of losing your own body and try to find joy in that space, or you lose somebody else and you find joy within that space, that's something that Peter cannot have. He does not have joy. He does not know what joy
is. Yes, exactly.
Because he's clinging, clinging, clinging.
Yes.
I think the thing is that we need to learn how to face death without a fear. If that remains a space that we're attached to or we're trying to prevent, it doesn't allow us to really be present and enjoy mm-hmm. the moment. And sometimes we focus so much on suffering, I think, in these practices, when I think sometimes we need to be focusing more on joy.
So. Thank you. That's a great point. Yeah. I appreciate that.
And that's all that really seems to matter.
I got one more question, because she mentioned something about attachment. And I think that's tricky, because, yeah, you could let go, right? And not let go completely, but be non-attached, like they like to say, non-attached. But in a sense, it's hard when you become non-attached, because you kind of lose, I don't know. I'm talking about my personal experience now. So, like, non-attachment, right? Like, okay, you're not over here, you're like balance, right? So I understand that with, like, love, I understand that. But it's like, it's not really a letting go, though. It's really like, it's still, everything's still connected is what I'm trying to say. So if you try to let go completely, you'll lose. Because I tried it before and it didn't work. And I think it's funny. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. But I think the world needs more like embracing more than, you know what I mean? That's what I noticed lately.
Let go is actually not losing. Let go is you don't need it anymore. It's almost like a releasing.
Right.
So losing is like you still attached to something, right?
Right.
But if you don't have this attachment, okay, I don't need this anymore. And right. I can let it go.
Right.
That's a different, there is a difference between that. Do you understand?
I do understand, but what I'm trying to say is, when I said embrace, I mean, so I'm talking about people, of course. What else? I'm not talking about anything else. I'm talking about people. So I tried, like, letting go. Like, you know, I don't need to deal with people. That's
no, you don't have to leave them.
Right, right, right.
You don't have to, you know, get right. rid of it.
Right.
You still can embrace those people.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much for staying. And then I hope you can enjoy the rest of the evening, and there is a reception there. Okay, so thank you so much.
Thanks, Maho. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This is our meditation podcast. Tell your friends about it. We're here every week. Visit our website, inmayadachanbala.org, for all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. Again, contentment in everyday life starts this Thursday, Shambhala Training Weekend 1, the weekend of March 2nd. Email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions. If you are in the New York City area, come to our weekly Dharma gathering. It's every Tuesday night. If you're in another area, if you're in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. Thanks for listening. Later.